Hear that, like Red? It was a hatchet job.
It was perfect.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Bella's All Souls Podcast. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
Tanya Gates and Adam Camilleri.
Hi everybody.
Oh hey.
Hello everyone. We are fresh off the Las Vegas Open.
Oh man, I'm still recovering.
I am still recovering.
I'm good.
Yeah, Tanya, you're holding it down up there in Canada for us.
I was moderating the chat. Thank you very much.
I know here, you know, it's like keeping the internet safe and secure for all of us.
Just imploring everybody to be nice.
that's a task. Yeah, especially, you know, a lot of people showed up to take a look, and I encourage folks to take a look at the competition that was, you know, you can still go to the Frontline Gaming Network on Twitch and see videos and see the games that were played. Some really exciting things. And Adam, you can speak to this, you know, probably better certainly than the rest of us can, since you were doing, you know, they'll recognize your voice and see your face if they go check you out on the Frontline
Gaming Network. Yeah, we managed to pull off some, what I think is some pretty amazing coverage. On Frontline Gaming Network on Twitch. We've got 53,000 views on the finals, which I am dumbfounded by and amazed. I think it's
totally worth it. It's a good play. You know, I also want to talk about the players themselves is that we saw, I don't want to say unknowns, just we didn't know them yet, bringing down the top 8 slots.
Exactly right. For those who may not pay attention to the competitive scene in years gone by, the LVO is a 3-day, what we call super major event, and that means it's done over 3 days. Everyone plays 6 games, and then the top ranked 8 people of the event play on the third day, and then it's a knockout finals. What was interesting about this one is that in years gone by, usually that top 8 is made up about 5. We expect them to, 5 of them we expect them to be there. 1 or 2, it makes sense that they're there. They're on a strong faction at the right time. And then there's usually one just, you know, good on for them, happy to be there. They had a good run or played out of their skin. We had 3 or 4 of the top 8 be absolute newcomers, people who I haven't met or heard of before. And I think it's absolutely incredible. I think it's awesome.
I think it says a lot about, you know, people kind of sharpening their skills, playing, maybe on the small scenes and then just coming to these large events and taking them by storm. It was really exciting to watch and see how the players react to it.
And I think it really speaks to how, I suppose, obtainable, I guess, Games Workshop has made 9th edition. And I know in years gone, I'm quite intimidated by the competitive scene, but now that GW is running events themselves, they've been quite invested in the balance of the game for a couple of years now. You know, those barriers to entry are really breaking down to these kinds of things. And I think it's an amazing indictment of the current scene.
Hey, I don't know if you guys have heard this before, but Custode's pretty good.
So it turns out. Sorry, Red.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, for sure, it turns out. I played them twice. It was an exciting experience, to say the least.
Were they variations on a list, or were they kind of similar to each other list?
I would say that they were both similar. I played them in round 5 and 6. Travis and Jonah, great players. It was really awesome. I mean, I was very fortunate the entire time to play against such awesome people. I admit there's a little bit of me every time, especially just how things go, that I'm always just slightly worried and concerned going forward into some of these games, you know, just especially at such a highly competitive event that, you know, you might run into someone or whether they're having a bad day or what have you, that I'm a little, but I didn't have any of that. And the people that I played against going to these custodes lists to finish off the event in games 5 and 6, it was awesome. And to be able to see the meta playing itself out against my army as I got just blown away in round 5. So the lists were kind of similar. They had a large number of custodes bikes. Travis's list had some really souped up characters. He really played into it with some amazing tactics. And I mean, that's the direction a lot of their stuff's going, right? You have this ability to just make these boss characters that can do all sorts of stuff. And it was a real challenge for me to chew through. And I just couldn't do enough to the bikes, that's for certain. With Jonah's list was very similar in that he had some really strong characters, but he, instead of bringing the Terminators that Travis brought, Jonah brought more Sisters of Silence. He had Sisters of Silence instead. So it was an interesting variation. Honestly, against Travis, and it's not even just a dice thing. It's just how it goes. I mean, he totally closed the distance and was able to shut me down, prevent my mana cores and Meltas from doing what they're supposed to do. He endured and survived through all of my firepower. Whereas,
that's not what you want to see when your Meltas get put out of position against things with.
Oh man,
sometimes a 0+ armor save.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and on top of that, with the, you know, no rerolls, which I mean, I'm completely relying on that with, and then plus transhuman. It was just the durability of the Custodes is awesome. It's really amazing to see. And with Jonah, unfortunately, for him, that my list just happened to get the right luck off on my end, and I was able to do some damage that allowed me to persevere through that. But definitely not against Travis. It just didn't work out.
You were playing into some tough opponents. I mean, I remember walking by your table and seeing you playing into Drukhari, and we're talking about you. You took your Gaunt's Coast list.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, man. I think I said it before on here. I went into that with the expectation roughly 2-4. I built this list not really with the meta in mind. It was just me wanting to play. I mean, almost all of the characters and the models have some kind of semblance or recognition back to characters in the book. To, you know, I brought Saint Celestine to be Saint Savat from the story. I brought, you know, and instead of Yorick, I have I'm using Severina Rain's model to be the female commissar from the books. And so it was really awesome, and I had a great time. And yeah, no, I did not get, I was not in the kiddie pool. I started out against Thick City. And then I went up against a hyped up Chaos list. And then I went against an awesome Tyranid list, not the Crusher Stampede, but the hardcore two massive units of Termagants with Gene Stealers and Hive Guard all behind. And that was, it was some interesting comparison between his list and my list, and that is like putting bodies in front of everything with really awesome indirect fire. And then, yeah, man, I, by the end of day one, I was surprised somehow I'd come out of that 3-0. Which wow. I definitely, you know, yeah, I mean, Gaunt's yeah. Ghost, it was pretty awesome. And then I saw I was playing Drukhari again, round four, day two, and, against Boris, no less, who, I was loosely familiar with beforehand because I've seen him commenting in other places, and the pleasure to be able to meet him actually, and then to get to play a game with him, was awesome. And I definitely, it went he had an amazing list and played it extremely well and handed it to me very well on stream, no less. And it looked really, it was a very good beating, and it looked very well on stream, I hope. So I enjoyed myself immensely.
So so Joe, the gentleman who runs the stream, it's War Games Live on YouTube for anybody.
Joe's great.
To check it out. Joe's a great guy. He's not as familiar with some of the names of people who were undefeated. So he asked me who we should put on for that round. And I saw that you guys were playing, and I looked at the list, and I'm like, oh, Red, I hope you can hold this. And so I was just like, oh yeah, he's going up. Let's do it.
Hear that, Red? It was a hatchet job.
It was perfect.
It was more that I knew it would be a great listening experience to anybody. Like, even if the game on the table wasn't amazing, the two gentlemen would be like of the upper echelon of conduct and sportsmanship. And Boris is one of the best players in the UK. So there's like no issues there. And I knew Red. With your army.
No, I mean,
your army was gorgeous.
To fulfill what you said, Adam, it was an amazing game. It was an awesome game. I wouldn't have asked for any other way in how that went down. And I really appreciated the opportunity to play against Boris. I'd do it all over again, knowing it may very well end exactly the same as it did. once more. So
I had more than several people come up and tell me that just how great your army looked too, Red. I know you put a lot of time into it, and it showed, and people were talking about it throughout the hall.
I appreciate that. I mean, that's really, I mean, I know I wasn't going to win any paint competitions or anything like that by any means, but I mean, Paul, you saw it, you know, in its nascent development. When I played at your place, and I've really tried to bring it together to get it somewhere that trying to do it all justice for just how much I love Gaunt's Ghost. So
I was like dual screening while you were playing, so I was like managing the chat, like the chat moderation, but I was also peeking in on your game, and like the chat on War Games Live, people would pop in and be like, oh, that army looks so great. Like, are those capes green stuffed? Is that third-party bits? Like, everybody was trying to figure it out. So I definitely think that, Red, your army has some wow factor for sure.
I appreciate hearing that. It's, again, like, yeah, it's really been, and I think I'm going to continue with them too, just because I just had such a good time playing with them. And not just, I mean, 4-2 is nothing to scoff at by any means, but it really was fun playing. And I think I'm going to enjoy, especially going into this next season, figuring out just different ways to go forward with it. So I'm excited.
Awesome.
I got to walk around and talk to people from, you know, all over the world that came. There are people there from Germany, Iceland.
I'm
trying to think of the furthest place. I mean, maybe outside of Australia.
I mean, didn't Peter the Falcon come a really long way?
He
came
did.
From, like, the Arctic Circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Peter the Falcon came down from there. We had the one of the Icelandic national team gentlemen on stream. I know those people there from the Austrian national team as well. Plenty from UK. Like, it was a really cool contingent.
Yeah, I got to see some of the Sigmar side, the hobby over there, off the charts as always. But it was just cool seeing people be enthusiastic about playing in events and showing off their models and, you know, hanging out with people. I loved
it. And there was the JDub preview happened. Were you guys in attendance? Well, I know, Paul, you were, yeah?
Yes.
Just in time, by the way. That was an odyssey in of itself.
My playing guide. So, you know, we do this other thing called the Thursday show. We do it on Thursdays. I had a 2-hour delay from my plane, so I missed that, but showed up actually 4 minutes before the preview.
That was crazy. I remember seeing you walk in. I'm like, here, take my wristband. So they let you straight through.
And oh, no, it was like a handoff. Yeah, that was, yeah. I wouldn't have made it in without the kindness of buddies. You know?
I was amazed by how many people. Apparently, there was 500 people who had gotten tickets to that preview.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool. That was such. I'd thrown my bags off. Came down the elevator, ran into you, Peter the Falcon, Val Heffelfinger, Richard Hughes, who's one of our producers. Just, you know, my best buddies. You know, it was a nice welcoming committee, and then the urgency and the willingness to get me to the preview in time was also great.
Is it Carbanda?
Yeah.
Is that how you say it? Is it Carbanda or Carbanda?
Carbanda.
Carbanda. That's right.
No, I call him, Dirt Nap McGee.
Yeah, I'm probably not the person to take advice from on how to pronounce names.
Better than me, mate. Better than me. Good old Carbanda, you know?
I will say, every time that I came across a Harlequin army, I heard you saying Harlequins in my head. I don't know why that was the case. But...
Well, Harlequins?
Yeah.
I called Cabanda old bloody shins to my mates on the weekend, because everyone's only going to be poking him in the shins because no one can reach far higher.
He's a big boy.
Yeah, like a blade guard, just gonna be like, well, I guess I'm hitting it in the ankle because I can't reach anything else. it's a magnificent model.
Yeah, Avatar was also shown in its full glory, and in the booth there was a real life Avatar, well, not a real life Avatar, you know what I'm saying? Avatar miniature,
the actual model. Yeah, one of the what's the gentleman's name who paints them up?
No, that was painted by one of the other staffers. It wasn't a Caleb painted job, although Caleb had some towel painted in there, and they looked gorgeous. I mean, the Avatar looked great too, but I'm saying that it was more, let's just say, you know, an average mortal man painted that other Avatar.
it was painted by one of the gentlemen, one of the J-Dub staffers there. I can't remember, for the life of me, I can't remember.
Yeah, his name. Feel so bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, Ryan. And he said he'd gotten, I think, just over 24 hours to paint it up for the thing. So I think he did a job.
Oh, no, Dude, I was, traveled, it looked good to me. Right? I mean, I was just happy it was there to be able to see it.
Then they had the vendor hall. I think it was on display in one of the cabinets there for the remainder. And it is so the benchmark that they had to reach for that model was that it had to at least look as good as the Forge World one, the Forge World Avatar of Kane. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Knocked it out of the park. Amazing sculpt.
They look similar in size.
Mm.
Kind of pose this question out to Twitter, but if anyone's listening, I certainly would love to know what you think as well. Is how are you going to equip it? I'm thinking bear head and spear is what I'm thinking.
I'm pretty OG. I'd put the helmet on.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'd put the helmet on. I don't think I'd paint the face white though. The one they've got in the display. I do like the molten. I'd go molten all over. Molten on the face as well. Like the
even molten though, it's supposed to be like white hot. You know, near the.
That's true. So that's a good point.
That's why the face is white, I think. But look, once you get the model, you can do whatever you want with it.
That's true.
So, you know, want to blend in with the rest of your army. I just think that bear head and that spear just look awesome. Although the axe looks good too. I don't know. A lot to think about. Just pretty cool. There's options.
Does everybody here have Eldar armies? I don't, but I'm just curious.
I do not anymore. I had a bunch of second edition Eldar models, which I think I probably got like two old Dire Avengers sitting around somewhere, a couple of Guardians, but that's probably it.
If you check me out on Twitter or possibly Instagram, you can see one of the Eldrin's Omen models painted by me. I don't mind sharing my trials and tribulations with it.
Nice.
Let's just say it's a Shroud Runner. That's the scout bike with the two scouts. And it's just been a long time since I've painted, you know, Eldari.
What scheme?
Beltane.
Is your stuff?
Yeah.
Good. That's the right answer right there.
Yeah, that's the craft world I play.
All I want from this new Eldar Codex is for Beltane to be like playable, as in like just Aspect Warrior goodness. No, like it's supposed to be.
Well, they have a great color scheme. I love that. And I've gotten better at it over the years, but I really had to kind of almost like retrain myself to paint the Eldar. And I struggled with it a little bit getting in the right gear to do it. But I did. I think I did it. Y'all can judge for yourselves. But Games Workshop, thankfully, very kind and sent me an Eldritch Omen box. And I was going to talk about after the break. We could probably talk a little bit more about the LVO in itself. And then we'll talk about some of the Eldritch Omen stuff because there's some customizability in the miniatures themselves I want us to chat about.
Awesome. How did you came to the LVO in strength, didn't you and the US Army Esports team? Yeah, Red?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. We had great time. And there's several people out there that came up and talked to us. And if any of them are currently listening, we'll we told you we were going to get back to you. We're still recovering just as much. And so we're really looking forward to engaging with everyone that did reach out to us. But yeah, we came. There were, I think, nine of us and that's maybe awesome. 11, you know, not fully in, not with all jerseys. We have a new jersey coming out. So I don't, you know, there's not holding that against anybody by any means because we, you know, you don't want to buy one and then have to change out all over again. But the yeah, no, we're super excited. It was awesome. It was a really great event for us. Some of us scored pretty well. You know, I was 136th. I think we had one who was playing Custodes, Garrett. He went 92nd. And then
go ahead. So before we get too past that, it's like that's even 136th or 150th or 300th even. You've outranked 600 other players.
True. I mean, yeah. The fraction, you know, it's of what everyone is a part of. It was pretty remarkable to see us and how the team did. And, you know, it wasn't just it being competitive. It was how much of a good time that we offered to the community to be able to play with and against. And so like Mark Aish, like just a really awesome dude came out and I think he was in the top 20s or so place. He did walk away with the overall, like for the season, number one Chaos Demons.
Yep.
So it was really exciting, really exciting.
I would like to point out that US Army Esports came 15th in the team rankings out of 1,000. So, you know, pretty good.
It was a great year for us. I mean, it was really glad to be able to get out in the community, you know, with all the COVID mitigations and everything going on. So we've really appreciated it.
And just to explain that, when we talk about rankings and things, we talk about the ITC, which is the International Tournament Circuit, which is, you know, where all this stuff goes. And if you participate in ITC events, it'll, you know, get a you'll accrue a score, which will put you in rankings, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you get points based on the size of the event, how many games there are, and all that kind of stuff. And of course, there are the LVO signifies the end of the season, and you know, come the Monday after LVO, a new season begins. And so at the LVO, they crown who's the number one player in the world in the ITC, who's the number one team, and who's the number one of each respective factions. In addition, they do the number one for the hobby track as well. So who was the best painted that year across the year, you know, who was the best painted at the LVO as well, all that stuff. So it's a really cool way of having a bit of fun whilst attending these events, and having some a bit of intrigue and a bit of spice as well, whilst being, you know, competitive without, you know, and there's no bloodlust or anything like that. It's more just doing the best you can. Well, I love some of the faction awards. You talk about Mr. Mark Aish, who's been playing Chaos Demons all year. You know, he's like a ain't no fair weather nothing there. This guy is just playing what he loves to play.
And there's serious regardless contention for that top demons also.
Yeah. Yeah, but what I always love about the faction awards, you're all mates. Like, I'm thinking I'm going to try and compete for the best Dark Angels player this year, in this next coming season, and I'm pretty sure by the end, like halfway through the season, me and all the other competitors in the Dark Angels ranks will all be talking to each other about what we're taking, why we're taking it. Oh, we need to take this to do this, and blah, blah, blah. It's funny, you're competing against each other, but everyone's kind of mates with each other because you're all kind of playing the same thing and have got so much too much in common to be anything else.
Well, you're chatting with each other also about how to attack the meta, you know, how to really exist and thrive. And everyone's spot on. That's one of the coolest things about our community is that they are happy to share those things. Heck, that's
absolutely
that's why we do this. One of the reasons we do the show, but that plays out on even folks that don't do podcast.
I love that even at the very top table at the LVO for like the top spot, you still saw amazing sportsmanship. I really do. Like, I am so blessed that I've not really had a sort of bad sportsmanship kind of like episode at an event, but I've heard of other people having them. But yeah, it was just like super nice to me to see like reasonable take backsies and handshakes and all of that. I did think that was quite classy.
Yeah, and the thing you're talking about there is the top table is a gentleman named Richard Siegler versus another gentleman named was it Matt Laura? Mm-hmm. What happened was Richard fully committed to trying to, with all his melee assets of his AdMech army, to dislodging the custodians who were hunkered down in the middle of the table. He had a couple of dreadnoughts, a couple of I think it was a unit of shield guard or a unit of wardens, and then he had a couple of characters. And what happened was Richard pushed everything in, and had some fights last bit of intrigue there in order to get a couple of swings before the custodians interrupted and took their pound of flesh. And what he didn't account for was that Trajan Valoris was hiding just on the other side of one of the walls. And because he could spend one CP to get instead of having a 3-inch heroic intervention, have a 6-inch heroic intervention. Richard wasn't aware of that. Firstly, he wasn't aware that he had a 6-inch heroic intervention, not a 3. I'm not even sure he's aware that he was there. But both gentlemen played it without any gotchas. Matt was like, okay, so he's here and he can do this. Do you want to reposition yourself anyway? And Richard was like, well, no, I've made the mistake, but I will let you do that, but I don't want to be completely out of position if you do it, so to speak. So he was committed to the mistake that he'd made, that he'd not foreseen, but both players allowed him to position such a way that it wouldn't be a massive issue, if you know what I mean. Like, they found a nice middle ground. There aren't many huge cash prizes in our scene. There's not many dollars to be made by being a competitive player, but there are quite a few at the end of this one. There's like a couple thousand dollars. And then at the top table, after 9 or 10 games between these guys each, they were still that classy. I loved it.
It's really nice to hear, nice to see. Yeah, if we haven't mentioned it was Custodes and Adeptus Mechanicus in the finals. Richard Siegler, who's been a dominant force anytime he shows up to a major event. And then, you know, someone who we did not know until now, Mr. Matt Laura, who Custodes, you know, played well the entire time, played well against Mr. Siegler in the finals.
And a really interesting list as well. Like, I didn't, like, he was bringing, was it 2 Caladiuses?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, he was playing Shadow Keepers as well, which was a lot of people are singing the praises of. Actually, there's a couple of different shield hosts that people are really on board with. We saw the Austrian national captain was playing a Solar Watch list, and then Matt Laura, who made it to the finals, was was playing Shadowkeepers, and then there's another gentleman in the semifinals who was playing Emperor's Chosen. So I guess it's really showing the strengths of that book that there are like good options.
Emperor's Chosen and Shadowkeepers seem to be the two biggest draws, I think.
Yeah. I think Solar Watch is like a particular build. If you make the build, Solar Watch can be just as good as the rest. But I think the other two are a bit more all comers. I think Shadowkeepers leans a bit more into getting into the middle and grinding away, being a bit of a, you know, I'm taller than you, and I will win if you come and try and stop me being, you know, getting all the points.
They also have the stratagem Grim Responsibility, which is selected to target when a custodian's unit, not non-vehicle, is selected as a target of attack. You subtract one from the strength of that attack, so already giving them some extra durability on top of being, you know, living walking tanks.
That's an extremely good stratagem. It used to be a little bit better when you could use it on anything, but now you can only use it on infantry. So I think it's far more reasonable now, because when you can use it on that was one of the big reasons that, I mean, the Telemons were that people were using, which is a big Forge World dreadnought. It was generally unkillable as long as the custodians play had CP. It's
like guilty.
It's not, yeah, it's a very good unit.
Yeah, they also get a little bit of attack lowering of the opponent's attacks, and the Emperor's Chosen have a little bit of dice manipulation, which you know, give them another way to interact with the game.
I think that minus one attack for the Shadowkeepers is really like underrated. People like that. I don't think there's anyone else who just gets that as a thing, like a chapter tactic, where they get it. They're not paying any CP for it. Is it? I think a Slash Demons can pay some CP and minus attacks, but it's not a thing you see that often. And really changes the numbers on when you're fighting against things like Custodes, because you need those, like you need like Thunderhammer level attacks to reliably take him out, and then everyone's got one less. It really changes the math a lot. I think it's a hugely, hugely powerful thing.
It really made me want to get my Custodes on. That was just seeing them all in action, seeing some of the Forge World units represented at the event, like the Sagittarium.
Oh yeah. Back to what Tanya said, the two Caladius grav tanks, I just think they're a phenomenal shooting platform. I think they're a great all-rounder. They're kind of what I wish like a Predator was. I suppose the Gladiator is more the comparison.
Is it just a Gladiator?
Now. Yeah, yeah. That's not the same. Gladiator's looking a lot better. Probably the best I've ever looked, but I'm still, maybe I'll buy a Reaper. We'll see.
There we go. Tanya got to meet, you know, your buddy that you've spoken about, Alex McDougall, also there, and
yep,
did a great job with a balanced list. He was playing Forces of the Hive Mind, took out a very strong list that was run by Manny Chima, who was playing a really crazy amount of racks, like 164 racks in a Jukari list. And just kind of showed that, you know, being a faction expert, really knowing your list, being balanced with your army list design, can beat some of these skewed lists in advance of the tournament. He made it all the way to the top four, if I remember right.
Yeah. I was so excited. Like, it was so hard to be doing the, like, because the chat was going so fast at that point. It was so hard to, like, moderate and also be like, what's Alex doing now? What's he doing now? Like, trying to, like, do both. And I knew, because I've faced that list, I knew that it had the tools to, like, systematically dismantle Manny's list, especially in Alex's hands, because he's just that kind of, like methodical, careful kind of player.
Two units, it's close to, 54 Termagants, or Termagants with Devourers.
Harlequins. but you're right. That shows Alex is like the perfect example. I suppose Scary over on Scarcast is another one of people who only play one thing. Like, Alex only plays the Hive Mind kind of grouping. Like, you know, that's either Gene Steel Cult, Tyranids, or, you know, Gene Steelers and Brood Brothers. And yeah, it showed. It showed absolute dividends. His list was really well put together. He did extremely well with it. I thought he was losing in his first finals match. He was playing against the wonderful New Zealand gentleman who currently resides in the UK. And I thought he was going down that entire game, because I was calling it and they weren't updating the scores. So all I was seeing was Alex. So what I thought he was trying to do is throw away models, you know, throw away units to just get heaps and heaps of points on things like engage in all fronts and, you know, on the primary score, except all I saw him was just throwing his units away, not getting any points. I'm like, he's lost his mind. It wasn't. They updated the score, and it was what he was doing then made a lot of sense.
Like,
they're like, it was working. But yeah, and he was in the semifinals and got knocked out by a Custodes player. By Matt Laura.
Matt Laura, yeah, because it could have been Richard versus Alex in the finals.
Oh man, like with the LVO in the top eight, if you make it to the top eight, any one of you is going to win it, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that thing is such a shark. Yeah. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Alex had it pretty much in the bag, and it's interesting how these things come up. But he was playing a mission that had what we call sticky objectives. And just to expand on that, you think of the objectives like instead of being like a pressure plate where you hold it as long as you're on top of it, it's more like a switch. As in, you walk over the objective and you flick the switch, and that objective continues to be yours even if you are off that objective, because the switch is still...
Until someone else comes over there and flips it.
Yeah, until someone else comes and flips the switch their way. And so that was one of the missions that was the mission I was playing on, and Alex forgot. Well, whether because it was fatigue and it was day three and, you know, game 7 or 8 for him or whatnot, you simply forgot that was the case, and it cost him the game.
Mm-hmm. I did send him a cheeky message after after his first game on the third day, and I was like, everybody in chat's mad at you because you didn't update the scorecard. And then I did check in and like, his body was hurting and all that. And like, I can't even imagine playing that many games. Like, I think I would be wrecked after the first day, to be honest. So to be on day three...
It's a bit of a grind. Really have to... I mean, one, you're having a good time and your adrenaline starts to kick in, and so that helps get you through. For some people, as you know, we talk about is that these 6 games are the only 6 games they're going to get that month. I mean, the only ones they get this quarter, you know, is right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you guys have the same thing as me? Like, you're really pumped for an event before, but straight after the event, I'm ravenous for games. And I've got so many new lists, models I need to buy. I've got painting I need to do. I've got a billion new ideas in my head. It's like the crescendo is after the fact, not during. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
I walked out of that event adding kits to my cart. You know, that was... I've got all these... They got these army ideas.
It was... so awesome seeing just the variation of things, you know, you whether it's MetaWatch or what people are putting out on podcasts and YouTubes, you know, what we talk about and whatnot, just to see such a variation. You know, you mentioned it at the beginning, the seeing the top eight and watching that play out, and I was pretty excited, I'll admit, and I don't mean this to discourage anybody anybody, but seeing the variation of personalities and armies in the top eight was pretty exciting. And to see the variations across all of these different armies and how people were going about it, you heard everybody, and you could see on Facebook or what have you, how people were like, oh, there's this many Drukhari, there's this many Tyranids, there's this many Custodes, but you still saw all sorts of variations of it. It wasn't just, you know, net listing here all over the place. It was people had their own spins on it, their own variations. And I think it was pretty exciting. And I think that it really says something for the event that it's, you can't just take a staple deal. And then, you know, after the balance sheet and everything and people abandoned, you know, 6 AdMech flyers and such. For Richard Siegler to come all the way and just go so far was pretty amazing. I got to say, it really is. The guy's just the bomb as far as how he went about that.
Perfect point. The variety was actually pretty staggering in the top eight. Usually we see the top eight becomes pretty, I hate to say, homogenous at times. There've been armies, there've been lists that have just kind of dominated a little bit too much. I'm really glad that the LVO judges decided and that the organizers decided to let Custodes and GSE enter this meta to become part of this event, the new codexes, that is, because sometimes you might want to hold off on those because they could shake things up too much, or people don't get adequate time to prep or the new models or whatever. But they let them in, and the top eight for this event was only 2 Drukhari, 1 Grey Knights, 1 pure Tyranids, 1 mixed Tyranids, 2 Custodes, and 1 AdMech. That is pretty good by usual LVO standards. That's actually quite diverse. I'm of the opinion that if they didn't let Custodes and GS and Genestealer Cult in, it would have just been, especially if GDub hadn't have started doing the balance data sheet update, it would have been four Drakari, four Admech, would have been our top eight.
Well, I don't know about Admech. Admech outside of Mr. Siegler had like a 45% win rate.
But I mean, if they didn't do the data sheet, if they didn't nerf the flyers, if they didn't do those things early. And even before, if we didn't have Custodes or Genestealer Cult, it would have been a lot of Crusher Stampede and Drakari. It would have probably just been those two. Would have been the dominant, probably like three of each.
The notable thing that didn't seem to make it in, and there was only one in the Shadow Round, which is a round played to get eight undefeated players, was only one Orc list.
Yeah, that was one that surprised me quite a bit. That was Lucas Troller. He did a phenomenal job. I think he went down to, I think it was Anthony Vanellis Drakari. And yeah, that was, I was a little... I thought we'd have one Orc in the top eight, no more, no less. So one Orc making the Shadow Rounds probably is pretty close anyway. But Orcs are in a really exciting place, even after the points changes.
I found his list really interesting as well, because it's not in the same kind of trope that we've been seeing Orc lists. There were a ton of Meganobs in that list.
Meganobs have actually been making a comeback in lots of people's lists, which is
good, because they're my favorite. Meganobs.
Yeah.
Well, they just went down in points as well with the chapter approved changes. So
everybody get free rockets.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm a big fan of the Scorchers on them. A friend of mine has been using them as truck boys, and they get out and they clear their own screens. I think they're a really awesome option because, of course, the truck boy upgrade in the book means you get to move the truck and then disembark the unit. And then, of course, if you call a war as well, they'll get an advance on that from the disembark. And you just slingshot them in and walk straight up to your opponent's screen, burn it down, and then charge on past them. They're really cool, like self-contained, aggressive asset.
Oh, but you don't think the Rockets do a little better going into Custodes and Crusher?
Rockets are just cool, right? You know? The only thing is they're hitting on fives a bit.
Like, you got 10 of them?
Well, you pay it. You're exactly right. Then you're like, well, I guess I'll just take 10 of them, you know?
It's only two hits. Still be fine. You'll be fine.
It's fine. It's fine. killed one Virtus Praetor Black. Worth it.
Yeah, but it strikes me a little weird that there weren't more of them doing better. I mean, it still did fine, and there were certainly, there was a variance in lists. Tanya's right. We did see more units that have not been on the table in a while.
Speaking to that, it was like Orcs is a really fun, like, I guess, examining piece, like example of a book at the moment that's been really well built. It's been built so well that there's no real one size fits all list. You can kind of do the traditional, well, I'm crazy, I'm gonna go off, some crazy, I'm gonna get in your face, wow, let's go nuts. I just hit him with waves of boys and Beast Snagger boys and Beast Hog boys and whatever the boy number name you can do. And then you have the Speed Freaks, which is kind of what the Freebooters list metamorphosized into. A lot of, funnily enough, the exciting thing about that is that it makes bikers, knob bikers, and defcopters extremely exciting. Like, and I think that's a great thing. If you want rockets, defcopters where you go. Like, Speed Freak defcopters, spicy. And then it's kind of a list that does a bit of both. Like, you have a couple of units of a bit of the goffs, a bit of the shooty bits. It's really cool. And I suppose that's the thing. Like, you can do any of those things and have a really good time. But I suppose maybe none of those things are as good as having one beautiful list. Like, one per top level list. They've got like three extremely good, very fun, very powerful lists, but they don't have one that's like at the Drakari level, I suppose.
Yeah, fair enough.
But like, is it good? Like, would it be good if select codexes had a list that was like oppressive like that?
No, it's not. It shows it. But I think Orcs is exactly where everyone wants to be. I think Orcs are like the benchmark. That's that's the perfect thing. You've got three different distinct ways to play it, and all of them are good. Drakari has those three things, but they're all sitting underneath this one thing that is just obviously better. So I think everyone should want to be what Orcs are. And I mean, before that, I think before the points changes, I would have said the same thing about Death Guard and the same thing about Sisters. They're like at the perfect place where you can kind of make your own adventure and have a good time.
Oh, my poor.
And you won't.
No, Blind Lords.
And my Death Shroud. No.
Oh my goodness. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Eldritch Omens, and that'll be our show this week. See you all in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Please check out our sponsors. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe on us. Leave some comments down below. Whatever you do. Thanks for everyone that's been leaving the 5-star reviews. That is a great way to interact with the show, and it also helps other people find us as well. We really appreciate that. Please keep the 5-star reviews coming wherever you listen to us, you know, Audible, Spotify, iTunes, all the other places. You know, thank you very much. Eldritch Omens. So this is a box set coming out. It's got some Chaos Space Marines. It has some Eldari, some Craft Worlds, and, you know, these aren't push fit. These are full-on multi-part type kits, and the Autarch is pretty cool. I'll say that.
The Autarch is looking pretty cool. You know, if you look back at the older Autarch, it's not bad, and it had a lot of variation that you could take to it. But I really do like the, you know, what they did when they re-upped on the Dark Eldar and their newer modern version of what they're at now. They definitely captured that kind of lithe aesthetic of it, and I think they did that with this Autarch as well.
I'm not really sure how to equip him, though. I think I'm going to go with a warp jump generator and a fusion gun.
I mean, hard to go wrong with a fusion gun, for sure.
The Dragon Fusion Gun. Range 12, Assault 1, Strength 9, Neg 4 AP, D6 plus 2, D6 plus 4, if it's within half range.
He's got a heavy melter rifle. He's got an Eradicator's heavy melter rifle. He's just walking around, probably not even dual wielding.
He's one-handed it.
Like, yeah, exactly right. I was about to say. Because life's not fair.
And then the warp jump generators, the bearer has move characteristic of 12 and then gains the jump pack keyword. Each time the unit makes a normal move, battle focus, advances, falls backs, or it makes a charge move until the move is finished, the model can move through models and terrain features.
Nice.
When the bearer's unit makes a battle focus move, it can move up to 2d6 instead. When determining the distance, if two or more dice results are one, then they take one mortal wound.
I think that's a very good setup. Jeez, that's really flexible as well. Are you able to give a melee weapon in addition to the fusion? I mean, no wonder like the Eldar look down on the humans. They seem like, see this massive Gravist armored dude walking around like with this, you know, car engine sized heavy melter rifle. The guy just pulls out his gun. He's like, you mean this thing? You mean you gotta have like a super soldier to carry this little thing? Pathetic.
The noisy cricket.
Yeah, the model's shuriken pistol can be replaced by one of the following. One Dustbender Dragon Fusion Gun, one Reaper Launcher. The model's Starglade can be replaced by one Scorpion Chain Sword. And then this model can be equipped with one Warspider Jump Generator. You'd also put a Banshee Mask on there if you want.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, it is. Does that all come in that kit?
Yeah, like, it's all in the kit.
Wow.
Do you guys
remember the old Space Marine Captain? Sorry, go ahead.
No. It's just that the Banshee Mask, I got to eek on that for a second. Because they took it away for a minute, right? It was gone. I was pretty sure that they got rid of the Banshee Mask on the old Autarch. And so to see it come back, if I'm not mistaken, I'm really glad to see it because there's a lot of good things I can do with an HQ character and a Banshee mask.
Yeah, you can't overwatch a unit charging or being charged by one of these can't overwatch or set to defend. While the enemy unit is within what engagement range of the bearer, subtract one from the attached characteristic of models in that unit, not to a minimum of one. It just says subtract one.
Oh.
Yep.
Seems good.
Seems real good.
Do you guys? The comment I was going to make. Do you guys remember
that's not even all the rules, Captain? Adam. Sorry, that wasn't all the rules.
Oh, okay, fine.
I'm really interested to hear about the Space Marine Captain, Adam.
The enemy unit is not eligible to fight this phase until after all eligible units from your army done so.
Do you guys remember just how many Space Marine Captain boxes you would buy? Because that box came with every available upgrade and option. Yeah. And you would just use that box to make one Space Marine Captain and a bedillion unique sergeants. Like your whole army's worth of unique sergeants from like two of those boxes. I used to buy them to kit out Vanguard veterans because I got gifted a bunch of Assault Marines. I'm like, well, I guess I'm buying this to make Vanguard vets. But now, if I buy a Primaris Captain, he's got to come with a sword and a pistol or a fist and a plasma pistol, but the Autarch gets to have every option.
Yep. And,
look, I'm not unhappy.
Altark has a 4+ invulnerable save, you know, so not bad.
I'm very happy for the craft world players to be getting new models. They've been, it's long overdue.
Yeah, it's nice recovery.
Dig up, Adam.
Wait, I mean, we got to go back to Adam. You don't actually own Eldar anymore, right?
Yeah, like I said, in a tub under my bed back in Australia, maybe there's a couple of like first press Dire Avengers, maybe.
Okay. Just check.
So the Altark has the Path of Command. While a friendly craft world core unit is within 6 inches of this model, each time a model in that unit makes an attack, it can reroll a hit roll of one.
Nice.
And then Superlative Strategist. While an enemy unit from your army with this ability is on the battlefield or embarked in a transport unit that is on the battlefield, you can use the command reroll stratagem twice during each phase instead of only once.
Did you say that again? They get to make two CP rerolls? Like
you can, yeah, you can do two re-rolls? CP rerolls a turn.
Wow, that's amazing.
Oh, sorry, a phase. That's each crazy. Phase. That's two cool. CP rerolls a phase.
That's really cool. But
yeah.
I think that's a super nifty mechanic. I wish they'd, yeah. That's a great idea, J-Dub.
So there we go. Altark, I think, will be in everyone's list. Sorry, I mean, we don't know that now until, you know, we see all the other cool HQs that come out for Eldari down the road. But I've always liked running an Altark when possible.
Did you see was it the Mugen Ra model got previewed?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my lord. Yeah.
They really pulled out the stops on that one. We don't need to talk about what they should have done with the Dark Reapers, like the actual other models that they have, because I think that they should have just taken Malgan Ra's aesthetic and just, you know, passed it on to these others. But that model, I have Eldar along with my Dark Eldar, and I just haven't pulled them out in a while. Yeah, I'm gonna get that model.
That model is metal AF.
Oh my gosh.
It really is.
Like, really I don't is. Even like Eldar, and I saw that model, and I was like, oh, it's so beautiful.
I mean, the first thing I thought of when I saw it, I'm like, man, that is just, like, the best-looking Nightbringer I've ever seen. Like, it looks so much better than the Catan.
He might be just as tall standing on those rocks.
Was it? the other joke I was about to say is if you get all if you just go back, say, maybe 18 months ago and get all the Eldari characters and put them next to each other, you'll be able to make a fence out of the rocks they're standing on.
All the busted statues or whatever it is there.
They're all in the same weird, broken Eldari tactical rubble.
It's Wraithbone.
Tactical roughage.
I can't wait to see the different paint schemes people are going to do, right? Because he's not just all going to be like black, like super, you know, Grim Reaper everything. But
hey, speak for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Okay, I get it. There's going to be some good other colors out there. I swear.
Oh no, it's hard. It's hard not to want to try to do that. God, it just looks so imposing. It's so good. So good.
Yeah. Well, you can always buy two models too.
Yeah. Fair. No. Good point. Good point.
That might be where I go with it.
Oh, but yeah, looking forward to seeing out. You know, we've seen some Dark Reapers. We've seen some other things. You know, it's just going to be... it's a good time.
I'm hoping there's... the only one I want now is the Scorpions. Give me brand new Striker Scorpions. They're my favorite. We saw the... they previewed the Shining Spears. Sorry if we missed that.
Yeah, no, we didn't talk about the Shining Spears. Yep, those look amazingly cool. And I like it. They're just the right... You know, they're going to be in the modern size.
Yeah, they're pretty much the same thing. They're just a bit less sitting up straight, a bit more dynamic, and
match the new jet bikes. You know, that's the coolest thing is that they'll, you know, right now, if you were to have some Skyrunners and everything, you're looking at, you know, potentially different looking, the older jet bikes mixed with the newer jet bikes. And it's just, you know, sometimes it makes your army look a little weird.
Agreed.
But soon, you may not have that problem.
I'm really glad to see the new models, honestly. You know, lots of people, especially with Inari and everything I've seen a ton of Shining Spears over several years. And
they were pretty obnoxious for a little while.
They were. And I mean, I can't say, you know, I appreciate what their position is, right, in the battlefield as a cavalry unit and what they've been able to do. They really are our sci-fi 40K cavalry unit. It's really good how they sweep across the field and they were able to just crush things. And with Inari, they were able to just keep rolling with that momentum. It was definitely
reminiscent of Vanguards, right? And so it was awesome. And with these new models, I can't say I don't mind seeing that back in the game.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm just excited. I know people are going to want to get these models in their hands. The Rangers are cool. The Shroud Runners are cool. Cool looking, definitely some, something that has not existed in armies before. And it's cool to see all the options on the Autarch.
Well, there's one big deal that they also previewed. A little known faction. There's two little known factions of Eldari. Like, there's the Unari, and then there's Exodites, and then there's one more, Corsairs. And now there's a freaking Corsairs model. And I am drooling, because the concept of them actually having like a 40k range is insane.
Yeah, it sounded like it was going to be a kill team. So, some number of models, probably 10 models, I would guess, Corsairs.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that makes total sense. But man, Corsairs have been around forever. And the idea of them being like possibly a playable thing is really exciting.
They were really popular coming out of Forge World, too. They were in the Imperial Armor type books.
Yeah, they had just a lot of really janky things, like a lot of pistol wielding, shivs and daggers, and it really cool. I think they had a lot of, I seem to remember them having a lot of hit run esque mechanics, like you could never keep them pinned down.
They had their own psychic amazing tree. They had some unique stuff that was only possible through Corsairs.
Yeah, that stuff did that stuff make it into 8th edition? I know it was actually really usable in 7th edition, but I can't remember if they had an index in 8th edition. They might have.
I don't know where they finally trailed off.
They were in 8th edition, because I remember people, we talk about these competitive groups and whatnot, and folks trying to score top faction. I absolutely remember Corsairs being one of the factions through 8th that people were trying to score into. But as Legends rolled out, they were largely phased out over time.
Well, there you go. But now no more. Start your Corsair journey in Kill Team, and hopefully end up in Warhammer 40,000. Yeah, it was a jam-packed preview of some pretty cool stuff.
Really was. Sure. And for anybody who doesn't know who Carb Bender is, go check it out. His story is incredible.
He's a bum,
says the Blood Angels player, who can't seem to get rid of him.
He saved your butts on Baal, buddy. Like, literally saved the chapter. But he is like he's like your team. Paul. He's legit like your Team Rocket, though. Like, Cabanda's blasting off again.
If blasting off is getting beat down by Sanguinius, yeah, okay, sure.
Perpetually only banished. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But there's no more Sanguinius to stop him, is there?
It's true. Oh,
man. You guys are just punching for the guts.
You guys are just camping his respawn.
Right in the fields. Like,
savage.
He's going to be back in exactly 6 years and 17 day, boys. Aim the multi-melters now. Rage, anybody? Be ready.
Oh, my goodness.
Spawn camping. Dead demon. That's so good.
That's our show this week. Yeah, it's like, anybody got anything coming up this weekend? Anything they want to talk about before we wrap this thing up?
I'm just recollecting myself, figuring out what my goals are going forward. That was really awesome. The LVO, I think it's been said already, it's like a family reunion, and getting to see everybody, new and old. There's just a lot. It is like a new year, right? Like, it's kind of funny that it kind of wrapped around the Lunar New Year, and it's right after our own New Year. There's just a lot of promise and potential going into this new season. And there's a lot of exciting stuff happening, as we've seen with the ITC and GW and everything. I'm really excited, and I really got to figure out exactly what my goals are for this next season going forward.
Your goals should be coming to Adepticon here pretty soon.
Oh, it's coming. The U.S. Army Esports team is going to be there. It's happening.
All right. I know I'll be there.
If I'm in the country, I'll be there.
Nice.
Fair enough.
Well, Red, Adam, and Tanya, it has been an absolute pleasure hanging out with y'all this week, and we'll see everybody next week.
Take care.
Can't wait.
Bye, everybody.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!